Episode number 5 of Football 52 as we record this on the 5th day of March, a beautiful Tuesday morning. Might get some interesting weather later on, Coach, but it's nice and bright here in the podcast studios. How are you, Coach Ed Lamb?
Doing well, thanks. Great to be here again, and great to see the sun shining.
Yeah, it's got to be good for you, too. I mean, it gives you more opportunities to go outside and do things. When the weather's nasty, I'm sure you still get outside, but you know, makes it a little bit easier when you get a day like this.
Yeah, certainly the guys can open up a little bit more. This time of year, we're training in the weight room for usually right around an hour, depending on the workout and the emphasis of that day, and then another 30 to 40 minutes out on the field after the lift. And when the weather's better, I think it just allows the guys to open up just a little bit more, push a little bit harder. And when there's ice on the field, or the wind's blowing, and the muscles are cold, I think it takes a little bit away. But if we're going to be a playoff team, we're going to need to be prepared to play in that type of weather as well. So there's benefits when the weather's bad, I guess, too.
Coach, do you think about those kind of goals, those realistic goals? You say playoff team, and it perks my interest. Are those things? I mean, obviously, you want to win every single game. I know it's a stupid question. Like, what are your realistic goals? A lot of coaches will just say, yeah, we want to win every game, and hopefully that leads us to here. But how often do you think about that being a reality? Because we've talked about this, how difficult of a task that's ultimately going to be for the University of Northern Colorado, and we've outlined some of those issues, some of those struggles. How realistic is that?
Well, the stated goal for the program from day one has been multiple championships while treating people in a first-class manner. And so we won't sacrifice one for the other. But I absolutely believe that that's possible here. I believe that's going to happen here at UNC, and I believe that the major determinant to our success is how hard we try. And I think that's true in college football, period. And the ability to be a cold weather, to be in a cold weather place, has shown to be an advantage at the FCS playoff level and at the pro football level, because these playoff venues are home. Their home field advantage, right? And that's not true in FBS or Power 5 football. Going forward, I believe the playoffs at the FBS level are going to be at neutral sites, probably in warm weather areas. And so I think some of the warm weather schools could have advantages there. But in the NFL, the powers that be are typically those that can play in the cold weather environments, and that's been true at FCS level of football for a long time.
Well, and I suppose that would be the plus for Colorado too, because one day, even in November, you're going to get a gorgeous day where you can almost cut the sleeves off that bad boy, or you're going to be doubling up with something over the top of the hoodie. So in Colorado, you kind of have the best of both worlds.
I think we're right in the power area of FCS football geographically. I think climate is a part of that. And I know that from a talent availability standpoint, certainly from a development potential standpoint, I like the state of Colorado and the players that we're getting right from this area.
Coach, I think in the first episode we talked about getting special guests to come in and talk, whether that's guys you've had a previous relationship with, whether you coached them, played with them, they're on the next onto the next level, even former Bears too. I think all that stuff is powerful. So talk to us about your most recent your guest speaker, and talk to us about what that really means to the team. Because I'm sure there's some kind of a download, or you're getting some kind of feedback after these guys are talking. And maybe we can go into detail a little bit about what the ultimate goal is. So talk to us about this really unique guest that you had recently.
So I've always been, since I became a head coach, I think it just gravitated my... The most authentic way that I can do it is with a lot of in-your-face intensity, high accountability. That wears on me. I lose sleep over not knowing whether the players are appreciating what I'm trying to do for them.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm not so convicted that 24/7 I don't doubt myself and my approach or my interactions with players. Geez, did I come at that guy too hard? Have I demotivated him? Have I made him lose confidence instead of gain confidence? I'm always asking myself questions about that. And so anytime that I hear from a former player, that's really the end mission. Is 5 or 10 years down the road, does a player reach out to me, or do we see each other somewhere and I get that that message that I covet so much, which is, Coach, I wouldn't be where I'm at if we didn't have the experiences that we had together. Thank you for what you did. And just this last week, we had an amazing opportunity. Miles Killebrew just finished his ninth year in the NFL. He was a safety for us at Southern Utah. Like all of the guys that came out of there, we had seven guys go to the NFL my last year there, 2015. We had three go to the NFL Combine. That's an FCS record still. Miles was one of those three, and Miles was drafted in the fourth round, which isn't a guarantee in the sport of football. A fourth rounder may not make it a first or second year. He just finished his ninth year. He's an all-pro. He came and spoke to our team. He spent 2 days with us.
Wow.
Attended the workouts both days on Friday and Saturday, and then spoke to the team on Friday night. He really prepared hard for it. And just to make that connection again, I don't do a great job of staying in contact with former players, but there's a love there. It's like family. Like the moment I hear from them, I'm so excited to hear from them. And so when we're able to make this connection, bring him back, spend some time with him, he stayed at my house, and he just did a tremendous job of talking to the players.
And you got to wonder too, like, I don't care in the NFL, if you can make it close to 10 years, if you make it, like, that is something. I don't even need to look at stats or anything like that. You were able to make an NFL team for close to 10 years, close to a decade. So that's phenomenal. How you get a guy like that who now says, hey, I played at Southern Utah and I'm playing in the NFL. How does that resonate with guys that look at it and go, wow, same conference, same situation.
Yeah.
We can go do that. Does it hit home a little bit harder than maybe if you get a guy that maybe you had a relationship with, but he went to a bigger school, a so-called bigger school, and he got to the NFL? How does that hit the guys?
Well, he was so honest with them and was able to look back. You know, I can still remember Miles and those guys that we recruited back then as high school seniors or juniors, and I can remember what they looked like and what their expectations were at that time. And, you know, I guess there's somewhat of a fear. There was somewhat of a fear by me that he would maybe come back and talk about mostly his NFL experiences. But he started his talk with, fellas, if you're in this room, if this staff has had anything to do with bringing you in, they're specifically bringing you in because you have the measurables and the character attributes to make it to where I'm making it. I was 170 pounds when Coach Lamb walked in the PE office at Foothill High School.
Wow.
He told me that he wanted me to get to 220. That's 50 pounds, and I did it. And that's why I'm in the NFL. I was the biggest safety in college football as a senior. That's the vision that Coach Lamb had for me. My dad and I bought into it. My dad knows nothing about football. He was an Olympic cyclist. But he knows that if you just do what the coach is asking, you're going to get to where you'll get further than you think you can. You know, he brought that message to our players. And I thought it was such a clear message because we have a lot of guys in that room kind of struggling. And then he also addressed the issue of, you know, you don't get slower when you get bigger. We're going to play. Here was a really cool part. He said, I'm from your stock. I watched your weight room session yesterday, and I am proud to be from this stock. I'm proud to be from this program. The weights haven't changed. The weightlifting program hasn't changed. You know, there's nuances. We've got a strength coach now that I didn't have at Southern Utah. And so, I mean, the science behind how many reps we're doing and the volume and the increases and even some of the lifts. But in terms of the intensity, the in-your-face accountability in the weight room, that's still the same. He was really proud of that, and he was telling the guys, I'm part of your program. I'm part of UNC. I don't know anybody at SUU anymore. I know you guys now. I know these coaches. I played with a bunch of these coaches. He also gave the message, he and all of his roommates went to the NFL. And so that magic that occurs when guys start to communicate their goals to each other and how they hold each other accountable toward those goals.
Was there a little part of you, and he's your guy, you know, he knows all the things that you're doing. Was there a little part of you, though, that's kind of, I mean, now he's at the NFL level. He's doing things in maybe a completely different way, or maybe a lot of the same. Was there a part of you that was like a little bit nervous after, you know, to get his thoughts on how you conducted, you know, this stage of practice and weightlifting and training at this stage?
Yeah, very much. I, you know, there was a part of me that, you know, when I look back at last year and all the things that, I wish I would have done differently that could have maybe made the small – I thought we needed a small difference to get several wins. We had several games where we were leading in the fourth quarter. We had several games even against top 10 opponents in the country where we were giving them all they could handle and had a chance to win at, toward the end of the game. And so I think about all the little things that I could have done differently that would have made a big difference. And I've tried to address that. And there was a part of me that found myself explaining several times to Miles when he would say, "Oh yeah, I remember when we did this, you know, the 316s, whatever the issue was, the way we talk about eating, the way we're weighing them in, the way we're doing body composition testing, the way we're doing combine testing, just every issue, I started to find myself repeating myself, like, "Well, I didn't do this with the guys last year because I'd been at BYU for an assistant as a long time, and I thought there were other keys, and so I'm going back to what we did at SUU. It's just specifically player development, from at least from the head coach. Let the assistants rock and roll with their strategies, their tactics of football. And really, I need to get back to in your face personal development, the total human development in every phase. But it starts with what we do in the weight room." And you know, about after he was here for 5 or 6 hours, we're doing a lot of talking and hanging out. I was like, "I need to stop talking about what I didn't do last year." Like, he's seeing the similarities to the way he was brought up in college football, and he's loving it, giving positive feedback, and he wishes the NFL, most of his teammates, were more like that.
Wow, and I think that's powerful right there. You know, you get a guy that's playing at that level for as long as he's played at that level to come back and then point to a lot of all those things. You know, he's referencing the 316, the same workouts that these guys are doing. That has to be pretty powerful right there, because we all love that. When you can connect with somebody and say, "We all remember those workouts," and then they come out and say, "Yeah, we do." Did you get feedback? I mean, do you get feedback from your players immediately after this? Do you get some kind of note that says, "Wow, this was a powerful one"?
It's usually years later, but
so it's not
or immediate.
Yeah,
I think
it's either immediate or years later.
Yeah, the immediate elation of for a guy that hasn't passed the qualifying workouts, the 316s or whatever they might be, the bench press standard based on body weight, all that stuff. When they finally break through, there's elation there, and that's usually, you know, they're celebrating with their teammates, and it's a big moment because the whole team is aware. A big part of what we do is just the accountability of basically appealing to their pride or shame publicly. And so we've got the lists up on the television screens of who's passed and who hasn't and how close they are. And these guys are, you know, they're close as teammates. So they're not, you know, even though it's a competitive environment, they're not sitting there wanting their teammate to fail. Everybody wants the other guy to succeed, and they want to enjoy in that moment. And so those moments are special. And occasionally we get a, you know, as coaches, we get a handshake and a thank you or a hug or something like that. But I think for the most part, they're focused on their experience, their teammates at this part in their life. And then when they become an employee, a business owner, a father, a husband, I think that's when they start to make a little more connection. And that resonates too with my own personal experience.
Yeah, well, I think that's fascinating on that side of it too, because, you know, in any role, again, we talked about your role as a head coach, you're managing, you're a manager too. You're managing everything that's going on with your staff, with your equipment, with your facilities, with your players. And then you brought it up to start the podcast. Hey, I wonder, was I too hard on this guy? Was I too easy on this guy? Well, they're not, especially college people. They're not going to tell you, "Yeah, you coached me perfectly right there. You managed me really well." And that maybe that happens even in the world of business. You don't always get a lot of employees that come up and say, "Hey, great management skills, great job leading this thing." So that has to be a lot of turmoil too. So again, going back to it, it's got to be so rewarding to get a guy that you coached the same way you're coaching these guys. Obviously, with, you know, 2024, maybe things have changed a little bit with technology and things like that. But that has to help you out so much mentally, because you're probably not going to get a lot of that instant feedback.
Exactly. And at this point in these young men's lives, they're just making so many decisions about who they are, right? And they've got problems. We've all got problems, yeah. But they're having some of these – they're making a lot of these decisions for the first time for themselves in their life without a lot of parental guidance. And so one of my main tasks, and I tasked myself with it, is I've got to help these guys remove their problems, minimize their problems, maximize their opportunities. And that's a very in-your-face, judgmental place to be sometimes for a manager or a head football coach. And yes, I do worry that I'm not doing it correctly, or I'm being too harsh, I'm pushing a guy too hard. And so every success is something I absolutely live for.
I think that's so refreshing to hear you say that, because deep down, I think even the public, we all know that a head coach, a head football coach especially, they probably do have doubts. But we never see that. You're a very confident guy. Every coach I've ever met, especially at the college level, every football coach, they're confident. They got to believe in what they're doing. And ultimately, you do. But that doesn't say that once in a while it creeps in your head, like, was that the right way to go about it today? So I think it's really refreshing to hear you say that.
I think we all, anytime a guy gets a new head coaching job, if they're my friend or they reach out to me and, hey, you got any advice? Because now I've done it, right? And done it successfully. My advice is always the same. Be true to yourself. I loved working for Jim Harbaugh. I love the way he approaches a program. But he and I are we're not the same. Our personality is too different for me to try to do what he does. Now, Lavelle Edwards coached me, and I don't know if there are two guys more opposite in and Lavelle, I've never heard in my time at BYU, I never heard Lavelle Edwards coach anybody. I never heard Lavelle Edwards get in anybody's face. I heard him, countless times talk about life, ask about your family, ask about your girlfriend, ask about your grades. And I'm somewhere in the middle of those two. And finding that middle was a real challenge for me early on in my head coaching tenure. And I think it was just a matter of going about my day the best I could, and then every night kind of, thinking about it as I'm going to bed, what was today like? Do I feel authentic? Did I get through to the players? And I think that athletes are experts, young athletes are experts at knowing whether you're being authentic or whether you're pretending.
I think especially now, with so many different options, with social media being constantly in guys' heads, they need to get that sense pretty quickly that you're real to them, that it really is about them and the team as a whole and growing this player so that you can all together achieve certain goals. And I think you're exactly right, at least from my very minimal experience and just dealing with athletes. You can hear in their voice the ones that they're talking about, the ones when they get up there, when they get to the NFL level or just in life, who they go back to and talk about. Speaking of Myles Killebrew and what he's done, you had the NFL Combine stuff going on all last week, and I always think that's really an exciting time. You look at what these guys are going to be able to do, what they're doing here. You're getting scouts coming out here to watch them. Talk to us a little bit about that. And when exactly was that? What date was that?
The NFL Combine was just this last week. I know it was, I think it was a Wednesday, Thursday, yeah. Friday. And we want our guys to be aware of that. So we actually coincide our combine style testing in our off season with the NFL Combine. And we're doing, we start out early in January with the 316 qualifications. And once the guys finish those and qualify, at that point, they move into more of a performance-based NFL Combine style, both training and testing. And I think, it's really twofold what we're trying to accomplish with that. The first is the awareness of the qualifications that it takes to be considered one of the top players in college football, which is what that NFL Combine represents, right? Those aren't NFL players yet. They're not all going to go to the NFL, or at least they're not all going to last any significant amount of time in the NFL. But that represents the 400 to 500 best players in college football every year, at least from a standpoint of who can fit in the NFL game. So I think it's really appropriate for our guys to be aware of that combine, to want to watch that, to be interested in it, and it's appropriate for us as coaches to make sure that they know what's going on. But then the other part of that is, I think it, particularly when we go through the struggles of a season like last season, everyone on our team has had a lot of individual success before they joined our team. And so suddenly to go through a winless season, I think every coach, every player is saying, I have more than that. I can achieve more than what we're achieving as a team right now. I'm being underutilized. I can help this team more. And it I think it really is divisive to lose. I think that's why the momentum of losing can take you in the wrong direction quickly for a longer period of time. And I think the momentum of winning as well, where you're grateful for the big play that your teammate made instead of resenting your teammate that was out there and failed and caused you to lose. You're grateful and have love for that moment that your teammate may have achieved. And it's just such a snowball type avalanche process in either direction. So I think that the testing is really some empirical data that we all need. And I think it's not enough to go around and say you're the fastest or to say you're the strongest or to say you're the most capable, to say you change direction the best. Prove it. Prove it. These are the things that NFL scouts care about. These are the things that make you the best player. And it's a physical game. This is a big, strong, quick man's game. This is not – we're not playing tennis. We're not playing golf. There is not a lot of skill. Now, quarterbacks are different. Quarterbacks, kickers, there's and even receivers, there's some skill that goes into it. But for the most part, the NFL is about the biggest, strongest, fastest guys. And I think this combine-style testing that we do and then actually publish it and put it out there in front of the whole team, I think it's really good for our team to just kind of settle in to a training pecking order, and then we go right into spring ball, and it's, okay, well, how do I move myself? I may not be the fastest or the strongest, but how do I move myself up the depth chart with being the best at my playbook, with being the best at my craft, and bringing what skill level is appropriate to my position?
It really is amazing, too, when you look at these things that we consider on the outside, little things that lead up to the regular season once you guys get in. For us, you know, on the outside looking in, Coach, we look at what happens on Saturday. Right now, you're building momentum, and you know, you talked about how good you can feel in an organization after a win, maybe even a win streak. What that does to the confidence level? Hey, we know we can do it now. We've seen the ball go through the hoop. We know it's possible. That's kind of the same thing that you're trying to achieve here in March. Is we know we can, maybe we can bench press as much as those guys that we were watching that we saw on NFL Network. Maybe we can run that 40 pretty close to some of these guys that are getting legitimate consideration. Maybe they can catch a ball with one hand with another ball in the other hand, like Dallin Hulker did mm-hmm. over the weekend, who's getting a bunch of praise. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things that I think when you're talking about building momentum, those are victories within the entire year, and finding that way to build upon that momentum is again, that's your challenge. That's your not struggle, but that's something that you're looking to achieve each and every day, each and every week.
Yeah, building confidence. It's maybe one of the easiest, most direct ways to describe my job. If I do my job successfully, I'm building confidence. These guys are building their confidence for life, not just in football, but for life. And I think it all works hand in hand. I rarely have coached football players that excel in football, but are unsuccessful in the classroom and in life. Mm-hmm. It tends to be guys that are well-rounded enough as human beings that they can get through the ups and downs of football that are going to occur for everybody. I don't care if you're Tom Brady, the best to ever play the game at your position. Football brings ups and downs. It is a hard, difficult sport. This is not we're not running track here. You don't predict with a 90% accuracy whether you're going to win or what place you're going to come in that day based on your previous results. This is a completely different team matchup, set of circumstances, game plan, tactics every week. And so confidence, if we can start to build it now in the off season, confidence is the thing that can take us through the ups and downs of the season.
Well, there's just so many different parts to playing high-level football. I mean, there's a lot. The guys you have on your roster, the guys on any roster in the state, you look around the Big Sky, there's a lot of talent. There's no question there's talent there. Guys that are extremely fast, guys that are extremely strong. But how do you piece all that stuff together? Which has always been one of the more fascinating things for me. And again, why the idea of this podcast is so cool for me, because you get to see what are those things that separate you. Because you'll hear some guys just have that talent, and maybe they get into the NFL, and then they have that ridiculous speed, and then it's gone. You know, they just don't have whatever it is that took them, that takes another player that's not as fast to get to that level and stay there. They weren't able to do. And I think that that's what's so important about this stage and all these young men's life is to be able to figure out what are those things we have to do on a daily basis to get us there. Yeah, we know we're fast and strong. We were fast and strong in high school. We got to get faster and stronger, but we have to do the other things too, the mental side of things.
Yeah. I talked with you a little bit, and maybe it was in our first show about just the there's a spectrum for coaches and which side they fall on the spectrum of, kind of in the goal of winning as it pertains to recruiting. Are you're recruiting the very best high school athletes that you can with the highest recruiting rankings, and or are you looking for more of the underrated developable player? And the reason to me it's a spectrum. Why can't you say, well, why not both? Why not look for the developable player that also is highly rated, right? Well, the problem with that at a place like UNC and most of the schools around the country is those are the guys that are actually going to the blue blood schools, and there are not a lot of them. But my experience tells me that that the recruiting rankings don't matter as much as the player development, especially at a place like UNC, especially at a place like Southern Utah University. Three times at SUU, we were able to play a guarantee game at the FBS level where they give us a check and we beat those teams. Mm. And there's no comparison of the recruiting rankings between an FBS and an FCS team. Even the very best FCS teams, North Dakota State, Montana, whoever's at the top of the game, South Dakota State right now, their recruiting class rankings aren't even going to be comparable to the lowest FBS level team. So it's not about recruiting rankings. It's about confidence. It's about motivation. It's about player development over a longer period of time. It's about looking at a high school player and finding out what they can be in 3, 4, 5 years.
Well, you're going to have, you know, speaking of the upcoming season, which, yeah, it's March, but it creeps up on us pretty darn fast. I can't believe it's already March. You know, we got the full schedules last week. We kind of knew the opponents and everything, but we see these schedules. There's going to be some big time opportunities for your guys within the state to go out. And, you know, I think these are big opportunities to prove, hey, even if you don't win that necessarily win that game, you go out there and show you belong. Doesn't that throw up a gigantic beacon for potential recruits, whether that's in-state, as we know you focus on, but also we know you put focus outside of the state too. It's not just in-state. Isn't that a beacon that if you can go out there and compete against these teams, like you said, with what you do with Southern Utah, you get a check, and then you go win those games?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the reality is our players understand that all of the Colorado State athletes were more highly recruited than them, had more opportunities. They're playing in what you would say nicer facilities with more resources, and there's more media attention. All of the things that I think an athlete would be motivated by extrinsically, right? Like intrinsically, you just want to be the best you can and win, and that shouldn't have any effect on the place that you're at, whether you're playing Division III football, FCS football, that shouldn't matter, right? You want to be the best player you can be. You want to win football games. Well, this is one that's on the schedule. What an amazing opportunity to play, you know, kind of one more game in our home area.
Yeah.
And most of their parents, families, friends can attend. It's an awesome opportunity to play up a level. Like we're not going to sit here in front like they put their pants on the same way we do. No, they have more pair of pants. They have more color combinations. They have a better deal with their equipment provider than we do. Like they have a ton of advantages. But let's see how we measure up. Let's get out there, try to play the best we can, and see how we measure up.
And not to relate, you know, the two totally different sports. But since we are, you know, getting close to March Madness, we're in basketball season. I think about UNC's battles against CSU on the basketball side of things the last 3 years. And I think I was at every game the last 3 years that they played. One of those games, the Bears beat them, was the last year. The year before that, the year where CSU had David Roddy and Isaiah Stevens, a first-round pick, and we'll see what happens with Isaiah Stevens. UNC took them to task for a while. CSU ended up overcoming an 11-point deficit to win that game. But I remember being in kind of both circles as far as media coverage. I remember people walking out of that gym in Moby Arena and saying, this UNC team, that is a ridiculous team. Like, we don't feel bad at all about a close game there. Who is this Dalton Connect guy? And then, of course, we know Dalton Connect went on to do some pretty incredible things at college. So, again, I know they're two totally different sports, but I tell you what, you put on a performance, or at least show that you can belong on that field, you're going to gain some different fans too that say, hey, maybe if this team's playing at this time, I'm going to be paying full attention to this team at this time because they're in my state. I have heard that more in the last 3 years on the basketball side of things than I did my entire time doing this show. So I just think it presents really a fun opportunity, a unique opportunity, and one where maybe, I mean, let me ask you, how much pressure do you feel in a game like that? Is that game more or less, hey, we're going to go out there and bust our tail and see what happens, maybe even pull up the upset? Or is it more of, hey, we don't have crazy expectations for this game. We just want to go out there and we want to show what we're made of. We want to show them we belong in that field.
Yeah, I think certainly they from a competitive standpoint, everybody wants to win, right? And there's an intrinsic pressure to win every time you step on the court or every time you step on the field. I think at the basketball level, right? Like they're actually UNC basketball and CSU basketball are the same division. They have the same number of scholarships. That's not the case in football, right? And
right.
So it's a little bit different.
Yep,
and I think
sure.
That's something that our other sport coaches at the FCS level always have to kind of remind their teams, because football is so visible, people can make the assumption of, okay, well, we're playing in basketball, we're playing up a level at CSU. That's not the case at all. We have in football, we have 63 scholarships. CSU and all of the other FBS programs have 85 scholarships. There's a major difference, not just in resources and facilities, but in just scholarships, period, right? Basketball, that's not the case. It's the same division, the same classification, the same rules, the same number of scholarships. And so I think our basketball team absolutely has that pressure every time. And our other sports programs, when they go and play CSU or CU,
sure.
Like, hey, this is our level. And if we want to be the best at our level, we have to do that. At our football level, the best at our level is right within the Big Sky. We've got the top teams in the country right in the Big Sky.
Well, and you know, again, you talk about the difference. The same reason we look at March Madness every year and a team we've never heard of, we can't even sound out correctly, goes on to maybe make it to the Sweet 16 or even beyond. Basketball is a sport that lends itself to that. Football, I mean, yeah, you might get some upsets once in a while, coach. But again, basketball, you get one guy that's hot and can hit 8 threes in a game. He's maybe averaging 2 threes his career a game. He gets hot. There you go. Football's never really a you get guys that get hot, but not like basketball. So you would need a lot of things to go right to pull off consistent upsets, which is why we see in football we don't see a setup like March Madness or anything like that. I don't know. With the way the playoffs are expanding, we might get to that point someday. But you're right. But again, that still gives – you got to think that gives an individual player – again, I know it's about the team. But if I go out there and perform and I have one of those games that really turns some heads where there's maybe a few more people taking a look in this particular instance, not only is that going to be good for that player, you're bringing eyeballs back over to Greeley. You're bringing eyeballs back over to you and say, hey, maybe they won the game. Maybe they pull off the upset. Holy cow, we're going to be paying attention to that team. Maybe they kept it close through the first three quarters. Who knows? That's how you can change things. And again, it's a lot more difficult to do in the football side of things than basketball.
Sure. The more players on any in any competition, right? Like it probably happens more often in golf where, you know, the UNC golfer beats the counterpart,
sure,
whoever they're playing against. It's just a one-on-one, right? And I think if we found a way to play 5-on-5 football or something, there'd be probably a better chance. But the more players you get on the field and the more players you get rotating into the game, at that point, the stronger, more resourceful program has a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger advantage. And that's why it's so monumental when it happens in football. In basketball, that's a tremendous story for our basketball team to beat CSU or beat CU. Like, we're, you know, the whole school is celebrating. The whole town is aware of it, all the UNC community, and not to take anything away from that. But it's just a completely different story if you do that in football and overcome not just the facilities and the increased media attention, but now you're overcoming actual a numbers advantage in scholarships. That is a monumental program changing and life changing for the guys that are on the field.
Maybe at some point, Coach, you can refresh our listeners of this podcast too of how the scholarship system works for you guys compared to what we see with CSU, because I think that's something worth really diving into and educating people on, because not people just look at it and say, you field how many players on your roster over, what, 80-plus guys?
Yeah, 110.
110 guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people on the outside, you know, maybe they're football fans, but they're not diving into scholarship chat.
Sure.
I think that conversation, maybe we can briefly touch on it, is worth looking into, because that right there, that's another different set of challenges that you guys have to face on a yearly basis.
Sure. I mean, simply stated, there's no time like the present. We can go into it now.
Sure. Okay.
Simply stated, the FBS level is 85 full scholarships. That's it. There's no other – every scholarship that they offer is a full-ride scholarship, tuition, books, room, board, and fees. And now at most of those schools at that level, there's also some NIL money tacked on of some type through their collectives. And who knows how long that thing is going to continue to last and what shape it's going to take. But that's like currently as we sit here today, that's a full scholarship at the FBS level. At the FCS level, we're a little more accountants. We have 63 full scholarships that we can give to up to 85 guys. And so a simple way to think of it, you're about almost a little over a two-thirds number right there. You could say, I'm going to have 85 guys on scholarship at the FCS level and they're all going to have about a 70% scholarship. Or you know, the way that we do it here, we bring guys in on a let's call it a three-quarter scholarship, right? If they have any other academic grants or federal grants or things like that, then they'll essentially be a full scholarship. But once they go into the starting lineup, they become major contributors. They're on the travel squad. They're playing regularly. At that point, we move them to full scholarship. So there are a lot of accounting several times a year when I have to go through our scholarship account book and I've got to justify, you know, what type of scholarship guys are on. Should they be increased? Should they be decreased based on their performance, based on their commitment level? And we usually don't have quite 85 guys on scholarship. Just because that's just the cap of what we could have. What we're really looking to do is reward the guys who have proven it on the field.
So that can change in the year. The scholarship allotment can change throughout the year.
It can change at any time, and it can at the FBS level too. Most FBS schools are probably rolling with somewhere around 83, 84, and that's why sometimes you'll see a kicker make a big field goal even at a big time school.
Sure.
like a Washington or Alabama, and the coach says, you know, in the locker room after, hey, this guy's going on scholarship, and the cool thing is if the scholarship was actually available at that time, the player gets retroactively awarded all the way back to the beginning of the scholarship term. And so it's a big, you know, sudden check, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars.
What is that like right now for you? And again, you said once you get into the season, you figure out what that starting lineup looks like, the travel situation and all that, you really start to finalize that. What does it look like right now with the guys on this roster as far as the scholarship allotment? Can we get into that right now?
Sure.
Or is that
I can. I mean, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I've got a good handle on it.
Yeah.
So typically, every player has a realistic expectation that at the end of the season and at the end of spring practice, they're going to have a one-on-one with me as the head coach.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about, okay, what scholarship are you on? And then what's your highest potential in this program? And then what are you currently accomplishing on the field? There's a lot of subjectivity in that, and it can be frustrating for players. And that's why my philosophy is, if I'm thinking it, you deserve to know it, right? Because there's subjectivity in how often they're playing, how often they're getting on the field. We make mistakes as coaches. Sometimes we find out later in the year that we should have been playing a guy more often. But it's just simply kind of, okay, well, regardless of all that, what is the contribution that you're currently making to our program, and how do we feel about the direction that you're moving? And then at that point, I use the scholarship as a motivator. It's not so much that it's the money, the dollar amount of the money itself, right? In the long-term scope of these players' lives, a few thousand dollars isn't that big of a deal. It is a bigger deal to them now at this age, but I think more than that, it's a tangible reflection of how the coaching staff feels about their efforts at that point.
I appreciate you going there with us too, because I've always known that that UNC situation as far as scholarships and at the FCS level is different than what you get at that FBS level on, you know, obviously looking at just these football rosters. But I mean, talk about a balancing act, you know, throughout the course of a year, because that's just another thing you got to add on to try to figure out where you're where you're moving that around. And if positions change, if a guy earns a starting job, maybe a guy moves down or something too, that's stuff you got to be paying attention to.
When I first got the job at Southern Utah, I had only been at major college football in coaching, the FBS level or the non-scholarship level. I hadn't been anywhere in between, and the Division II and FCS level is in between that, right? There are partial scholarships. And I can remember talking to a sitting head coach at the FCS level, and he said, you don't want to be an accountant. Just stick with 63 full-ride scholarships. And I had a lot of respect for him. He's a very good coach, very successful. And yet I was like, that's not me. I need to actually use increases and decreases. I need to be able to like a manager in a company, give raises, not just for the money amount. The money does mean something to the players, but I need to be able to give them something tangible because I'm not as excitable as some of these other coaches that I've seen. I'm not, you know, I think I'm a little more serious-minded. I'm a little more composed in my conversations. And so these guys need something tangible from me because I don't give as many high fives. I don't smile as often as some of these other coaches. I don't wear my emotion on my sleeve like that. So I've got to be authentic to myself and give them something tangible.
I think that right there, that is just, again, getting to know you more and more. There's your self-reflection. You know, you go in there and say, this is the kind of coach I am. You know, this is, I'm not the big rah-rah guy all the time. I'm not jumping and, you know, hooting and hollering. There's a lot of coaches that are not like that. A lot of very successful coaches. Obviously, you're one of those guys. But you look at that and say, hey, I maybe can't fill those gaps with that kind of motivation. So I've got to find and take advantage of what we have at our disposal. And I think that's just fascinating. Probably makes your job on the accounting side a little more difficult. But you're willing to look at that and go, yeah, it's worth it, though, because I can use that as a motivator where maybe my lack of rah-rah sometimes isn't going to make up for that. I think that's fascinating.
At Southern Utah, I had an Excel workbook, right? Several sheets. You have to have a sheet for every year. And then if you're recruiting LDS missionaries, you have to have accounting or scholarship sheets out for projections in future years,
wow,
3-4 years down the road. I've got to give credit here at UNC to Rachel Walton.
Okay.
Rachel Walton. One of our associate athletic directors, senior women's administrator, and she is amazing at the accounting part of scholarships. And I didn't have even that position. I didn't have that resource at Southern Utah. We had a smaller department and less resources than UNC has. And so I was doing it all myself. And then when I got here and found out that she was doing it, not only that, she really she enjoys the challenge of doing it. And so I would give her kind of some end goals on, hey, here's how I'd like the players' meal plans to look. And boom, she'd run with it. And it was like better than I could do. She's finding money in places where I wouldn't have found it and doing it all. She's also our compliance team. And so she's doing it all in a way that that is in compliance with NCAA rules. She's been a huge resource to me, so glad to give her a little bit of a shout out.
All right, you're juggling, you're balancing a budget, you know.
Yes. Kind
of, I mean, and that's basically what it is, you know, going through all of that. And some people just love it. I am not one of those people, Coach. So I just, you know, that's difficult for me. A lot of numbers.
So I was an English major in college, and some people hear that, and I guess it's fairly rare for an athlete or whatever to be an English major. I was just avoiding math. I had no particular interest in reading. I like to read. I like to write even. But I was like, you know, I took one stats class. I started out as a comms major, and I took a stats class, and I'm like, oh, no, this is not for me. So I go to the advisor, and he says, well, you can take the 1 year of stats, or you can take 3 years of a foreign language as an English major. And I was like, yeah, let's do the 3 years of foreign language.
But here you are putting that, and again, with Rachel's help, obviously, that makes it a little bit easier. But those are still things that you have to be thinking about, you know, on a pretty consistent basis.
Well, it's the end goal, right? Like, yeah, I don't like overhead presses in the weight room either. But, you know, there's an end goal there. And the end goal of being able to really manipulate those scholarships and use that as a motivational tool at the FBS level, which I've been at for the last 7 years and at other times in my career, it's full scholarship or nothing. And so if a guy's not performing well, that's why it's a little more cutthroat, like, hey, you're not getting renewed. You're done here. Or we're encouraging you to transfer. At the FCS level, I don't do it a lot, but there's that. I think the players understand, like, hey, you know, if you're going to be showing up late, we can fine you like the NFL. Like, maybe, hey, look, this is your overall performance over the course of this year. You know, we're going to reduce your scholarship by 10 or 20%.
And they all kind of, like, they know that going into it, that could happen potentially, that maybe where we were after this discussion coming up in March, you know, this is where we're going to be. Maybe we're going to be this way in the fall. But they know that, hey, if something happens here, whether that's showing up late, not doing the right things, or even losing their starting job. They're all aware of that going into it.
Absolutely. I declare my intentions. I mean, I'm very upfront about being tangible rewards and tangible consequences for misbehavior. And I've told the players too, I'm honest about this part. I haven't, as a head football coach, I have never taken a player scholarship for lack of talent. And I will never do that. If we recruited a player or a player's on the team, we inherit them, whatever the situation is, if they're going to show up every day, they're going to stay out of trouble in the classroom, stay out of trouble in the community, they're going to show up every day and work hard, it's my responsibility as a coach to make sure that they become the contributing player that we need them to be to earn their scholarship. But if they're letting other areas slip, we're not going to have a lot of patience for a guy who's not making a big contribution on the field.
Yeah, well, I think that just adds to the management factor that goes into being a college football coach, specifically in the Big Sky Conference at the FCS level. All right, Coach, you're rounding out the coaching staff, too. We had a great conversation last week on the wide receiver side of things. I thought that was really fun. But you got yourself a new defensive assistant.
We did. We've got J.B. Hall. Just joined us. I think he had a second day with us yesterday, back and forth kind of with HR and some of the business office things that we all know about when we first start a new position somewhere. But really excited to have JB. He's a very experienced Big Sky coach. His previous job was at Utah Tech, and the head coach there actually came up with me. He worked for me at Southern Utah, the previous head coach at Utah Tech. He was with us at Southern Utah, got the Utah Tech job, and they didn't have enough success, so he was just let go. And so JB was kind of caught there in the middle with a new staff coming in and that guy wanting to hire more of the guys that he's came up with. And so JB was available. We're looking at several different opportunities. We recruit coaches like we recruit players. Like, okay, I don't want to hear the word interested. Like, when you want to be at UNC – and you have the qualifications we're looking for, that's when we're going to make an agreement here. And we got to that point with JB where he wanted to be here. It's a pretty natural fit for him. He grew up in Boulder and his parents still live there. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right. I heard that correctly from him. And played Division II ball here in Colorado. And so I think he's very much a fit for us geographically. He's coached at three different Big Sky schools, four different FCS schools. He's got some experience as an analyst at Georgia Tech. So he's seen a lot of football. He's going to bring to us a more experienced coach than what we've had. Our experience level in that defensive staff room is going to go up. And I think most of all, the first thing we're looking for is just a great person, and I believe that that's what he is. Everybody that I've talked to about him, that's the first thing they bring up is what a great person he is.
Well, and I know that's so important to you. We've talked about it with all of your staff. You know, some of the new guys we've chatted about, the guys currently on the staff that were there with you, how important that is, to have that buy-in. You know, I like that you say, hey, I don't want to hear the whole, hey, I'm interested.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk first. No, I kind of want to – we got a role here. So do you want to be a part of what we're doing? You kind of have some familiarity with who we are. Let's not waste each other's time.
Yeah, that's where our players are at. I want the match. Like perhaps if I was coaching at one of the Blue Bud schools, if I'm coaching at Michigan, maybe I'm getting out there and competing for coaches. And, trying to be the highest bidder for a coach who's really established himself out there. But that's not our player makeup here at UNC. UNC is quite simply the very best opportunity that our players have to play at the highest level they can. And anybody who's walking around fronting like they had an offer from CSU or CU or something like that, they're lying. This is their best opportunity. That's why they're at UNC. I want coaches that are in the same boat. I want to be really clear. I have different job opportunities from year to year, but this is my best opportunity to be a Division I head football coach right now. I am right in the thick of it with the players, and every assistant is going to be that same. I want them coming from that exact same dynamic. This is J.B. Hall's very best opportunity to be a defensive assistant right now in Division I college football. And he's excited about it, and our players will sense that.
Well, and we discussed this a bit last week too. You're all fighting for one common goal. You are a team, but you're not kidding yourself to know that, hey, an assistant coach is coming in here. The better they do with their core group, the better they're, the more opportunities they're going to get someday. Maybe they don't ever leave. Maybe they stay with you for a really long time. Same with the players. They know that, hey, if we go out there, then we at least have those options. But I really like the, again, I think we've had some messages saying that, you know, the raw nature of this podcast, but it also, there's a lot of truth to it too. It's like, hey, we know where we are right now. We know who we are right now. We know what we want to be though. And that's more important at this stage. And that's why finding the right people is, guys that really buy in quickly. Not I'm interested, or let's think about it, or I'm going to try it out for a while. You got to get that sense pretty quickly. You got to find those guys that really want to be about this life that you're creating.
Sure. And on the flip side of that, like you mentioned, I absolutely have no qualms, no hesitations about people who are using this opportunity to increase their marketability and have better opportunities somewhere else. That's reality. And it's becoming reality for our players with NIL. It's possible that a UNC freshman can come in, develop themselves to their highest potential here at UNC to the point where they're getting $100,000 cash offers on top of a scholarship to go somewhere else, right? It happened in basketball last year with Dalton. And it can happen in football as well. You'd be jumping up a division, so they really have to excel and establish that here. A lot of FCS players are finding that the portal is a dead end. And they're just kind of jumping to be jumping. And I think when you do that, you put yourself – you really risk not having an opportunity, or at least not a better opportunity than you left. But if legitimately guys earn an opportunity here in coaching or playing – to go and make their situation exponentially better, we're all excited for them.
Well, Coach, again, episode 5 here. It's been another fun edition of this podcast. Again, I love doing it. And I think, these shows will open up too when the nature of college changes a bit. We're going to probably have some more changes in editing with the NIL stuff and how the transfer portal is going to look. They're talking about at the FBS level with the college football playoffs. That's already – they had a plan for 2 years, and now they're talking about maybe not that same plan. How that could change for other FBS schools, but I've even heard the rumor mill churning about FCS schools and what that can mean for them at that stage if we end up separating. I don't know what's going to happen in college sports in the next 5 to 10 years, but it's fun to be able to talk to you about it, pick your brain about some of this stuff too, because it's all going to mix in at some point. I mean, there's all of these discussions come back around, it seems.
One of the few positives that came out of the COVID experience with regard to football was you saw teams, and I think BYU was at the forefront of it, and I was right there in the thick of it when we scheduled Coastal Carolina on 3 days' notice. These games are sometimes 10 years, and we set them
right.
10 years
yeah.
in advance.
Yeah.
And the idea that you could set a game in 3 days, get on a charter flight, the next day, get out there, and play the following day was just – I mean, that's unheard of in college football over the last, 75 years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
To schedule a game on that short of a notice. And I think with how quickly things changed with the COVID rules and the way we could practice and the way we would play and whether or not there would be fans in the stands and just the constant changes, I think it kind of served notice to everybody in the college football community like, hey, I think we can be more flexible and move towards a better game. And that's what I'm seeing with those playoffs. Super excited about it.
As rough as the COVID year was, obviously almost 2 years for everybody, there were things that we took from that and said, wow, you can do this, and makes life a little bit easier here. Coach, before we let you slide out of here, spring break is already coming up. Can you believe that? I mean, it feels like it was just Christmas, right around Christmas when you and I met and discussed the podcast for the first time. But we're looking at spring break now. What's that look like for you and your team?
Well, we have to plan our training around it. And so we train right up until spring break, and then the players have that spring break off. I'm excited for them. It's a good mental and physical break for them. We've done our preaching about spring breaking like an athlete,
mm-hmm.
and you can give a lot back in 7 days. And these guys have worked too hard to give all that back with poor decisions over spring break. So we want them to do it like a professional. When we come back, we'll have another week of training before we get into spring practice. I'm a big believer in that. We just want to kind of get these guys – as strong and as fit and as injury resistant as they can be before we start into football practice.
I had an old basketball coach. I really respect the heck out of him, but he would, you know, again, small level stuff here, but we'd go for Thanksgiving break and all that stuff. And he would always say something along the lines, and I always wondered if this was scientific. Yeah. So you tell me, you know, 2 days of bad decisions will erase 2 weeks of all of the work that you just put in. How true is something like that?
I believe it. I've had coaches say things like that too. Here's
my brain starts going to science. Is that real?
Yeah. The thing about studies and research is it changes too, right? But yeah. Here's what I know. Like now that I'm getting, you know, I'm 50 now. When I make good decisions about my diet and my exercise, I feel that. And I feel the decision of a bad meal right away. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel that when I was 18, 19 years old. So I think a lot of times with these coaches, whether they're citing a study or not, like they're talking on the real, because you can just feel it when you get older, how food and rest and good decisions and bad decisions affect the overall energy level.
Even sleep. I mean, if I go to bed 30 minutes later than I normally do, I wake up and it's like, what did I do all night last night? I mean, come on. So, yeah, there's a lot of truth to those things, too.
Yeah, especially sleep.
Yeah. Coach, always appreciate this. We'll look forward to episode 6 next week, and we'll get rocking and rolling there. Always, we kind of always, you put together kind of a bullet point list of things that are on your mind, what's going on, like as far as the agenda for your program this week. But then we branch it out. We go different places. So I appreciate you going there. Scholarship stuff was fascinating.
Yeah, thanks for leading it. I didn't plan on talking about that, but I appreciate your insight, your vision on the program. It's really good to be able to have a conversation around that.
It's 90% of what I do. I turn the mic on and maybe something good happens. Maybe it's bad. You never know. But something's going to happen. Sounds will be made. I can guarantee you that.
Hey, take liberties, man. I don't know if anyone else is listening and enjoying it, but we're having a blast, right?
I love it. No, it's something that means a lot to me because it's something I've never done before. And to be able to sit for an hour with you every Tuesday, a Division I college football coach, it's a dream come true, man. So I really appreciate you, Coach.
Likewise, enjoying it.
All right, we'll be back at it next Tuesday. Football 52, you can find the podcast available through all of our channels, 1310kfk.com. Look for the whole show under Amazon or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, all those good things. We'll talk at you guys next week.